Oceana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT presents Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat.
Booger, up and in! With 2 seconds left, Notre Dame leads!
Malpas again, backhands, he scores!
Down to the corner, Jablonski, three is good!
Andrew steps in, he's going to throw deep for T.Y., he's got it!
Flips to Jenkins, three for the win, it's good! Villanova wins it!
He dives, it is a touchdown! New England wins!
Adios! Cubs win their ninth in a row!
Miles Boykin is in the end zone!
The Irish have come back!
Your hosts are Eric Hansen and Darren Pritchett.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Sports Beat on 96.1 WSBT. On this Thursday, May the 31st of 2018, Eric Hansen back in our WSBT studios. As always, the Fighting Irish Football Insider for the South Bend Tribune. I'm WSBT Radio Sports Director Darren Pritchett coming to you from Midland, Michigan. Final game of a three-game series featuring the South Bend Cubs and the Great Lakes Loons tonight at 7:05 on WSBT Radio. Pre-game coverage begins at 6:50. South Bend back home to take on Lake County at Four Winds Field tomorrow night at 7:35. On the program this evening, a lot of college football talk in our opening hour. We'll answer some college football preseason questions in our opening segment. Then at the bottom of this hour, it's Tyler James, the Fighting Irish Football Recruiting Insider for the South Bend Tribune. He'll join us for the IndyInsider.com recruiting update. My five question of the day, Eric answers. The five Notre Dame football players that have the best chance to earn All-American status this season. Next hour, we will pick up on a conversation that Sean and I had yesterday, and it centered around the Anthony Rizzo slide in the Pirate Cub game a couple of nights ago. Well, then you had the Pirates having a very interesting slide into Javier Baez at second base last night. So was that an illegal slide? Was it a dirty play? We'll get into that coming up next hour. Also, we've got rapid fire, and we'll set up the South Bend Cubs game as well. All coming up here on 96.1 WSBT. Sports Beat brought to you by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds by Goshen Heart and Vascular. Know your numbers. Visit GoshenHeartAndVascular.org and by Blackthorn Golf Club and their Blackthorn card, which is just $99, and you can save up to 80% off rounds of golf. That includes cart at Blackthorn Golf Club. We say good afternoon to Eric Hansen back in our WSBT studios. Well, I'm reporting bright sunshine and no precipitation here in Midland, Michigan. So we've been pretty consistent with our weather the last couple of days, and it sounds like it's a good thing we're on the road again today.
Well, currently it's pretty nice outside. We had good. A little bit of a splash of rain earlier, but you wouldn't know it by looking outside right now because the pavement's dry, and our producer Jerry is happy. So I would say that it's a sunshiny day, Darren.
Then you're happy then.
I'm happy. When Jerry's happy and you're happy, I'm happy.
Perfect. We'll just keep that up day in and day out. All right, so let's get to a little college football conversation. Eric, inside of 100 days to go until Notre Dame and Michigan at Notre Dame Stadium. Doing just a little walking around the local mall here in Midland today. They had a probably 4-foot high statue of Jim Harbaugh with a big smile on his face and the headset on with the khakis and the blue navy Michigan long sleeve shirt. I felt like that would be a great addition to the South Bend Tribune sports office, but I resisted the temptation and thinking maybe that would be a great present for you guys for Christmas.
Okay.
Wouldn't that be great? A Jim Harbaugh smiling little statue to put in your office.
Well, I'll tell you what, we've got a lot of other weird artifacts, so it would fit right in.
Okay.
We actually have a Photoshop picture of Al Lesser handing Brian Kelly the Sun Bowl trophy.
Okay. Is Brian happy to see Al Lesser in that picture?
He is. He's very happy to see Al.
And is Al happy to see Brian?
They both have smiles on their face, which probably happened a few times.
I'm sure.
In real life.
All right, so let's get to some college football questions. I've just kind of thrown together some questions, and we'll discuss them and have a little fun as we kind of get you ready for the start of another college football season. Here's number one. It centers around the Fighting Irish, Eric. From the 2018 Irish football schedule, what is the under-the-radar game that could be more of a problem for Notre Dame than most fans expect?
You know, I've been kind of studying the opponents here real recently. And so I'd say, you know, I mean, first you have to identify which games are on the radar, and there's a lot of them. So you can't say something like Virginia Tech.
Right.
So I'm going to go with at Wake Forest, the fourth game of the season. It's the first road game of the season. Wake Forest has a lot of people back on defense. Their defense wasn't that good last year. And they lost a couple of really good defenders, including Jesse Bates, that have gone to the NFL. But they have a lot of defenders back, and they have a lot of offensive firepower, minus John Wolford. Greg Dorsch, who was a prolific freshman receiver in the ACC, missed the Notre Dame game because he was injured. Right. He's going to be back. Their running backs, their offensive line. The thing is, can Kendall Hinton give them a little bit of what John Wolford gave them at quarterback? If so, that Wake Forest game gets kind of interesting because I think it's, you know, Notre Dame isn't going to expect it to be, a difficult game. And Stanford follows it. Stanford and Virginia Tech follow it. So that would be my pick.
And it's the first road game.
Yeah, it's the first road game after three consecutive home games to start the season.
You know, honestly, I didn't consider Wake Forest when I looked over the question, but I think you put forth a great argument. I went a little bit of a different direction, and I have two choices, and I really could not come to a conclusion on which should be my ultimate answer. Eric, the first game that I looked at was Northwestern. Now, Northwestern is a team that has consistently won, it seems like, 7, 8, 9 games the last few years under Pat Fitzgerald. So I don't feel like I can really go with Northwestern just because they have been really, really solid the last few years, and Northwestern beat Notre Dame at Notre Dame Stadium a couple of years ago. So I thought about that because it was before the Florida State game, but I scrapped that, and I guess I'm going to go with Syracuse. And Eric, the only reason is it's after Florida State, and if you beat the Seminoles, it's going to be an emotional win. Then you got to travel to the Bronx to Yankee Stadium to take on Syracuse. And then it's also the week before you travel to the West Coast to take on USC. And Eric, I tell you what, Syracuse has a really good quarterback. Now, I don't know if they're going to be able to stop much in that game. I don't know a whole lot about the Syracuse defense at this point. Maybe you can fill in the blank there.
Sure, I can.
But I just feel like in between Florida State and USC, that Syracuse game is sitting there. What was supposed to be a home game, it's now a Shamrock Series game. That, to me, just makes me a little nervous. And I've always felt like I hope we don't lose the USC game by playing the Syracuse game in New York. But I think that Syracuse offense, now you have a lot of confidence in the Notre Dame defense, but that Syracuse offense gets going, it could be at least interesting at Yankee Stadium.
Well, on Eric Dungy, you know, the thing about him is usually at that time of the season, he is out for the season. He's been knocked out late in November, I think, every year that he's played. But he's a heck of a quarterback when he's healthy. Throws more interceptions than maybe he should, but he's a true dual threat. And he really frustrated Miami right around the time Notre Dame played him. It might have been the week before, or week after. But, I mean, he frustrated Miami. Where Brandon Wimbush certainly couldn't do that. The thing that Syracuse might have to do for the first time in Dino Babers' tenure as a head coach anywhere is be more run-oriented. They lost all their good receivers. Now, maybe they have some good new ones that nobody knows about, but they're going to be very inexperienced at receiver and tight end, and they're going to be pretty good at running back. So maybe they'll be a little bit more of a running team. Defensively, they're a disaster. They were last year, and they will be next year. So it'll be, you know, they're going to try to outscore Notre Dame. And, you know, if Dungy is healthy, I mean, at least that keeps him in the game. If he's not, then I think that, you know, they could put some of the New York Yankees in the lineup and beat Syracuse. But I think it's a bad timing game. I agree with you. You're going to be beat up after Florida State. You're going to be looking ahead to USC. especially if you just beat Florida State and if you're still in the playoff talk. That's kind of the games that have kind of bitten Notre Dame in the past. We think of Boston College game at Fenway was a very similar game.
I'm going to hurt my own argument of Syracuse by saying this, but we can't forget that Clemson at home beat number two Clemson last October, 27-24, and Eric Dungy had three touchdown passes and 278 yards against the Tigers. So that was an upset victory for Syracuse that day over Clemson. So I don't know if that hurts my argument, but at the same time, I just pick Syracuse more so because of where it fits on the schedule. And you feel like Dungy, if he has a good day, it could keep things very interesting. Okay, so you'll go with Wake Forest, I'll go with Syracuse. Here is another question for the college football season. It also centers around Notre Dame. I like to pick up magazines and go to websites and get other people's opinions on Notre Dame. A lot of times these are outsiders that maybe don't have as good a feel as those of us in the local media with Notre Dame. So I like to grab some of these quotes and then throw them at Eric and we have a conversation about it. Adam Rittenberg on ESPN.com listed what he feels is the biggest question mark for Notre Dame this year. And let me read his statement. I could go with offensive line chemistry or the safety position.
Ugh.
But if Wimbush doesn't improve in high-stress situations, it's hard to see Notre Dame contending for the playoff. Notre Dame structured much of its offseason around simulating chaos, likely with Wimbush in mind, after he struggled down the stretch, completing just 44% of his passes and two multi-interception performances in the final four games. Wimbush took the necessary steps to improve in the winter and spring, but if it doesn't translate against Michigan on September 1st, Notre Dame likely will have to recalibrate its expectations. So Rittenberg on ESPN.com feels like the biggest question mark for Notre Dame this year is how Wimbush handles the ability to throw the football and handle high-stress situations. Agree or disagree? And if you disagree, what would you go with?
Well, I think he makes a good point. I think we've been making that point, so maybe he's been reading our articles. Well, I mean, really, when you look at last year, what separated Notre Dame from a playoff team the most? It was its passing game. Mm-hmm. You know, the defense wore down a little bit at the end of the year, but you look in the Stanford game, if Notre Dame had just gotten adequate quarterback play against Stanford, they win that game. The Miami game, everything was a disaster. I'm not sure quarterback play would have saved them, but it would have saved them from losing by 34. So, you know, those two games late in the season, you know, in the Georgia game, I thought, again, the defense played incredibly well against Georgia, and just a little bit more oomph in the passing game, Notre Dame would have been able to kick a field goal and beat Georgia. So I think that's really accurate, because the defense is going to be better this year. The running game won't be as good. There's going to be more pressure on the quarterback to have a good passing game, and that's why it was so emphasized in the spring.
Well, the three things that he talked about, one of them was he could go with the safety position. Now, we're guessing, we're pushing forward what we think is going to happen, but I don't think the safety position is going to be a weakness for this football team. I think at the very worst, it'll be average, and I expect it to be better than average, especially as the season goes on. So I think with the changes at the safety position, if it is Alohi Gilman, you like that. And if it's Houston Griffith, young guy, you know, until he gets on the field in a real game situation, you don't know, but he sure seems to have a good feel for the position from what happened in the spring. He also listed offensive line chemistry. That's fair to bring that up. Sure. It normally takes some offensive lines some time that have changes to get that chemistry. Now, I think we feel like there's a really good group ready to go at the offensive line spot, and maybe by October they're clicking at the level they want. That's just a guess. So I think that's fair to at least throw out the offensive line. But, yeah, the quarterback position and the ability to throw the football is going to probably separate this team from a regular bowl game or a spot in the college football playoff, because if you can't throw the football at anywhere around 58-59%, I just think it's very difficult to get the job done. You have to be able to throw the football to help your running game. And in November, the passing game went down far enough where it did affect the running game. So I do like the choice of Wimbush. I don't think safety should be in the conversation. Offensive line chemistry, I think it's going to be fine, but I think there is a reason to put it on there just until you see the offensive line click, hopefully sometime in September.
For sure. And look at the 2015 offensive line.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it took a while for Ronnie Stanley, Quentin Nelson, Nick Martin.
Wow.
Mike McGlinchey and Steve Elmer to click in 2015. And that's, you're talking about three first-round draft choices, a second-round draft choice, and a guy that would have been drafted had he stayed with football.
In a business suit.
In a business suit now. So, I mean, so yeah, it takes some time. And again, Michigan is going to kind of, they're going to test you, but they may also skew reality, because if Michigan's defense is as good as last year, let me give you an example. In pass efficiency defense, they were fourth. Their pass efficiency rating was 103.71. If you look at quarterbacks, you flip that to quarterbacks, that would make their opponents collectively the 104th best quarterback in the country out of 110 that had enough games and attempts to qualify. So basically seventh from the bottom. That's how good their pass defense was last year. So if Brandon Wimbush doesn't complete 70% of his passes against Michigan and throw for five touchdowns, mm-hmm. that doesn't mean he won't eventually get there. Now, if he looks like he did against Miami, then you have problems. But if he is, you know, above 50% with his passes, doesn't have interceptions, you know, plays a solid passing game, I think that's really good considering Michigan. Same thing with Notre Dame's offensive line. Michigan's defense is kind of skews. You have mm-hmm. to grade it on a curve a little bit just because of how good they are.
If you can give me the Brandon Wimbush from East Lansing, you're going to win a lot of football games.
I would agree with you. I would agree. That Brandon Wimbush, that performance against Michigan on September 1st, I think you win the Michigan game with that performance, because I think Notre Dame's defense is going to be good enough against Shea Patterson. There's going to be some surprises for Michigan's offense just because I think Clark mm-hmm. Lee is going to have a little bit more wrinkles than the Michigan offensive coaches are going to be anticipating.
All right, college football preseason questions. Eric and Darren with you on WSBT Radio. Here's the next one. Who will start at quarterback for Florida State against Notre Dame? Francois Blackman, who had 2,230 yards and 19 touchdowns, the offensive MVP for Florida State in 2016, or actually, those were Blackman's numbers. Excuse me, I got the two mixed up. And James Blackman, who started 12 games in 2017. Actually, it's
DeAndre Francois.
Thank you. I have no idea why I wrote that down wrong. Thank you. Or Blackman starting at quarterback for Florida State against the Irish?
I think it's easy because I think in headlines you see Francois/Blackman all through Florida State's spring practices. And it surprised me, Darren, because, you know, James Blackman came to Florida State like a three-star quarterback, wasn't very highly recruited. And DeAndre Francois not only was very highly touted, Notre Dame actually looked at him at one point, but he was really good when he was healthy. He had a really good redshirt freshman year for them.
3,350 passing yards.
Yeah, so I thought, wow, when he gets healthy, this is going to be no contest. And he's expected to be fully healthy for August. He did get into some off-the-field trouble in the springtime, so maybe that tightened the race. You know, Willie Taggart is a new coach, so he's going in with a blank slate with these two guys. So he's not looking at their star ratings or their past film. He wanted to see what he sees live. Now, I think when we get to August, DeAndre Francois is going to be the guy that separates, so I think he'll be the starter. But it surprises me that they're this close at this point.
Interesting. Well, you mentioned the off-the-field problems. That's just part of being a Florida State football player. You have to get in trouble at least one time, right?
All right.
We'll move along from that. Just a joke. All right. And we have JT Daniels. He finished high school early so he could enroll at USC for the 2018 season. Now, there's a couple of other choices at quarterback, but will Daniels start at quarterback for USC? Question two is, will we start to see more high school players attempt to enter college early, or is this going to be a rare occurrence?
Okay, I'll start with JT Daniels' possibilities to start for USC in 2018. I don't know that he'd be the starter on opening day, but I think he'll eventually be the starter. Matt Fink and a couple other guys had a chance to kind of knock it around in the spring, and nobody looked like a starting quarterback in the spring. Now, that could change with those very same guys in August, but I think JT Daniels, if he doesn't start the opener, which I don't think he will, he'll eventually be the starter, kind of like Sam Darnold was, you know, a couple years ago. He wasn't the starter right at the beginning, but then USC got off to a bad start. It seems like Clay Helton feels like he has to do that and then plug in the real quarterback. And, you know, he's the consensus number one player. If he's that good, you know, he probably should be starting. And then the second part of your question was, do you think that there will be more players that do this, that reclassify themselves and come in early? And I think John David Booty might have done that for USC, if I'm not mixing up my booties, but I believe that was the case. But anyways.
That's a promo waiting to happen.
Yeah, it is a promo waiting to happen. But I don't think so, because I think, again, when you look at most quarterbacks, they're kind of, they want to come in older. And Jimmy Clausen, for instance, he was 20, I think, when he was a freshman. So, which would have been like 3 years older than Romeo Okwara, a defensive end who played for Notre Dame a few years ago. But I don't think you'll see that a lot. I think JT Daniels saw that Sam Darnold was going to go in the draft and there would be a chance for him to kind of jump in there. And he had his credits all lined up to do it. You know, instead of coming in early as an early enrollee in the spring, why not come in a complete year early? But again, you're talking about the number one player in the country,
right?
Not a guy that's maybe the sixth dual threat quarterback or the sixth pro style quarterback. So I think just once in a blue moon, you'll see a guy try to do this at the quarterback position.
That wraps up college football preseason questions. Coming up next, Tyler James from the South Bend Tribune will offer his weekly IndyInsider.com recruiting update on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader.
Budweiser's weekday sports beat continues on 96.1 FM WSBT with the NDInsider.com recruiting update. Here's Darren Pritchett, Eric Hansen, and the South Bend Tribune's Fighting Irish football recruiting insider, Tyler James.
Always great to have Tyler on the program to talk Notre Dame football recruiting on your home of the Fighting Irish, 96.1 WSBT. Rarely do we start our IndyInsider.com recruiting update by talking about a punter. But that's what we're going to do today because the Irish got a commitment this week from Jay Bramblett. So, Mr. James, put on your punting evaluation hat. How good is he, and is there anything else we need to know about this guy?
Yeah, do you think we did this segment on Tyler Newsome all the way back in 2014?
I don't think so.
So Jay Bramblett is Notre Dame's punter commit now, 6'2", 185-pound kid out of Tuscaloosa, Alabama, Hillcrest High School. Was on campus this past weekend, had also visited for the Wake Forest game last season, and Notre Dame felt comfortable with extending an offer earlier this week on Tuesday, and he said it only took him a couple hours to decide that that's what he wanted to do and decided to commit and then announced it yesterday. So everyone I've spoken to about him has raved about him as a punter. I talked to Chris Saylor, who runs Chris Saylor Kicking, a national kicking camp, with a series of camps throughout the country, and so he's seen just about everyone you can think of in terms of punting and kicking. And he says Jay Bramblett's kind of the total package. I certainly can't necessarily evaluate punters that well, but he's a good athlete, which he says helps him a lot. And Jay actually told me he's going to be his team's starting quarterback this coming season. He's a good baseball player. He had a walk-off home run in a tournament game not too long ago, earlier this month in May. A guy that's done a little bit of everything. His dad's a football coach, so he knows the game and loves the game. He's only been punting since his sophomore season. He decided to pick it up as they had a starting safety who was their punter, who was kind of gas, so he figured, well, this could be a way I could get on the field, and decided to do that. And with some training, he's turned into one of the best punters in the country. Like I said, Chris Saylor kicking ranks him as the number one punter in the 2019 class. Cole's kicking ranks him as the number five punter, but they tweeted yesterday on their Twitter account that they'll see him moving up the rankings soon as he performed very well at the Southern Spring Showcase for Cole's kicking. So a guy that has pretty decent numbers. His average last year was only 39 yards, but he told me that was a lot because they were kicking into the end zone a lot, so he ended up pinning the other opposing team inside their own 20, 25 times, so obviously that'll shorten up your average a bit, but was averaging over 43 yards per punt at a recent camp, so a guy that has good hang time as well. Kind of the total package. Sounds like what they were looking for, obviously, it would be a need right away when he gets on campus with Tyler Newsom exhausting his eligibility.
Tyler, I say this half kiddingly and half not kiddingly. Has Mick Aoki, the Notre Dame baseball coach, contacted him yet, given their need for pitchers?
I did not ask him that, but we'll have to see. Maybe this will open his eyes and say, hey, maybe we can get this kid on the team as well.
Eric, go again. I mean, fire away. That was a simple question.
Okay. Well, following up on that, do you feel like, Tyler, that there will be – that Notre Dame wants to get a kicker in this class?
Uh-huh.
Or do you feel like they're going to wait a little while? Because you lose Yone, you still have Jonathan Doerr, but what if he gets injured? What if he doesn't develop the way they think? Do you think that they will go sifting for kickers from – all these specialty kicking schools and so forth?
I think there's a chance that usually in June they have their specialist camps, and so maybe if there's someone there that they feel like they really need to go on, I would lean towards maybe them waiting till a future class and relying on Jonathan Doerr, unless they have seen something in practice that we're not aware of, that they're maybe not as comfortable with Jonathan Doerr as a kicker. But I think that they have the chance to be picky if they want to, so I don't know that there's a need that they feel like they have to, but if there's a guy that they feel really confident about, usually when it comes to special teams, they're not necessarily offering guys that they don't think will commit to that offer. They're usually going to find one guy and then move forward with that guy. And so if there's someone that they feel that in the 2019 class that wants to come to Notre Dame and they think is good enough to be a kicker here, they can get that fixed sooner rather than later, maybe they'd go ahead and do that. But I don't know if there's any pressure or a real big need to feel like they have to do that right now.
Tyler James joining us, IndyInsider.com recruiting update. I'm going to go off the script, if you don't mind, just for a second,
sure,
throw a curveball at you. Since we're kind of talking special teams right now, when you think back to the class that signed that will be freshmen this fall for Notre Dame, are there a couple of guys that stand out that might be able to help Notre Dame on special teams? Doesn't have to be a return guy. Maybe there's a return guy that could fit into their plans. Maybe it's just a guy that will cover kicks that's really good. So is there a name or two that pops into your mind when you think about that class?
Yeah, in terms of return guys, I think they're kind of obvious choices with Braden,
yep,
Lindsey, Tariq Bracey, Joe Wilkins Jr. All those guys have done that. Lawrence Keys, maybe. So anytime you look at the speedy corners, the receivers, those are guys that are always options. And Brian Pauline even mentioned in the spring how it's easier for guys to contribute right away as a kick returner, maybe, rather than a punt returner, with punt return being a little bit more skilled and a little bit more pressure impact than being a kick returner. In terms of other guys, I think in terms of a coverage guy, I think Bo Bauer would be someone that's interesting. I know Brian Kelly seemed to always mention him when asked about freshmen who were standing out in the spring in terms of early enrollees. So a linebacker that can get down the field and make a tackle, I think Brian Pullman would be happy to have a guy like that. if they're willing to burn a year of eligibility as a freshman. Other guys, maybe even a Paul Mawala is a guy that I think could be a special teams guy that could help somewhere down the road. I don't know if that's necessarily as a freshman or not, but he would be another guy that I think would be good in special teams coverage, even a Shane Simon. Those are guys that I think can really get down the field and make a play in the open field.
Tyler, wide receiver TJ Sheffield, and I applaud him for having a top four and not a top 14. Put Notre Dame in his top four. What does it look like in terms of who the Irish are competing with? What are the chances he ends up with the Irish?
Yeah, TJ Sheffield's top four is Ohio State, Notre Dame, Purdue, and Arkansas. He's a 5'10", 170-pound wide receiver out of Tennessee Independence High School. Was offered by Notre Dame back in January, and he visited later that month. So we'll be keeping an eye out for a potential return visit. I think that Notre Dame certainly has needed a wide receiver in necessarily the pole position for many other wide receiver recruits. So I think TJ Sheffield's towards the top of the list when you talk about guys that could likely end up in this class. So we'll see how Notre Dame fares against that competition that I mentioned. He had 56 catches for 840 yards and 5 touchdowns. Maybe more of a slot receiver than an outside receiver, but a guy that certainly could help Notre Dame put together a wide receiver class.
1 week from today, Tyler, you'll be on the program, and we might be talking about cornerback Cameron Kelly, who was supposed to announce his school a week from today. Do you think we'll be talking about him joining the Irish?
I do not. I think right now it looks like it'll be Penn State or maybe Virginia or Clemson. Notre Dame received a spot in its top 8 back in April, alongside Auburn, Ohio State, Oklahoma, Washington State, and the schools I previously mentioned. Cameron was a priority early for Clark Lee. He attended the Wake Forest game, and Clark Lee visited his school several times throughout the evaluation process. But I think Cameron won't be ending up in Notre Dame's class. I think Notre Dame is in a good spot with obviously having K.J. Wallace committed at cornerback, but in potentially looking for another corner, there aren't a ton of obvious options there. I don't know that there's a giant need because they did well at the cornerback position in the last class, but if they can get another corner to pair with K.J. Wallace, I think that would be an important addition.
Well, I got another kid that's got a top whatever, and I did see this pop up on Twitter last night. Braylon Trice, defensive end. I think he's from Texas. Notre Dame is in his top 5. What kind of player is Trice, and what are the chances the Irish end up with him?
Trice as nice. You were actually incorrect, so I apologize. I have to correct you. He's from Arizona.
Okay.
From Phoenix, Sandra Day O'Connor High School. 6'4", 230-pound defensive end, long frame, athletic, weak side defensive end. More of a project than Nano Osafo Mensa, who is committed to Notre Dame, but a talented player. When I watched his film, I kind of thought of Bo Wallace, who was committed to Notre Dame back in the 2015 class for any longtime recruiting heads. He actually didn't end up enrolling at Notre Dame, ended up going to Arizona State, but a little bit skinny guy, but could add some weight, but has some pass rush ability. A 3-star recruit, according to 24/7 Sports, as the number 33 weak side defensive end, and a 4-star weak side defensive end, according to Rivals. Notre Dame's in the top 5 with Washington, TCU, UCLA, and Oregon. So Notre Dame is hoping to get him on campus. He hasn't visited yet, but obviously he has caught his attention with an offer this spring. So Notre Dame is looking to add another weak side defensive end in addition to Nano Osafo Mensa, and Braylon Trice is towards the top of that list in terms of guys they're interested in.
Eric, let me ask Tyler back-to-back questions here since we're going to talk about the tight end spot. Last week, the Irish missed out on what could be the number one tight end in the 19 class, who picked Auburn over the Irish and also Clemson. First, were you surprised at all?
No, I had a feeling he would end up at Auburn, although it was kind of a mystery towards the end. It wasn't really obvious, but I think that wasn't a huge surprise, although Auburn doesn't necessarily use the tight end that much.
I mean, it's got to be tough to recruit a high-end tight end in this class just because of the depth at the tight end position.
Right, yeah, I do think so. And so maybe what your next question would be, would they consider skipping a tight end in the 2019 class? And I think that is a possibility, although I think because Chip Long likes to use so many tight ends, if he has an opportunity to add a tight end that he likes, I think he's going to try to do it. So there aren't many options out there right now. Eric All is their most recent offer out of Fairfield, Ohio. So he's kind of become the guy we're looking at as potentially the top priority at tight end in the 2019 class. But Notre Dame has some talented 2020 options, so maybe if they can get it, especially if they can get a guy in the 2020 class committed early, maybe they decide that they could skip over the 2019 class.
Let's talk about the 2020 class. Any expectations right now building with any of the members of that class at the tight end spot?
Yeah, Kevin Bauman is expected to visit on Saturday. He actually just was offered last Friday, and so the fact that he's already planning to visit this weekend is a pretty good sign for Notre Dame. He's a sophomore at Red Bank Catholic High School, which is the same New Jersey school that produced Quentin Nelson, so obviously a little bit of a tie there. At 19 catches for 380 yards and 5 touchdowns, ranked as the number 2 tight end in the 2020 class by 24/7 Sports, so top tight end talent, highly regarded, has offers from Michigan, Boston College, Nebraska, Northwestern, West Virginia, among others. So when you see a guy scheduling a visit so shortly after receiving an offer, that is a pretty good idea that he's really interested. And when it's a Catholic kid from New Jersey, it's hard to rule out the possibility that maybe he really likes Notre Dame, and the recruitment could not last that long. So we'll see how things go this weekend, and if he feels like he's seen enough. I don't know that that's necessarily what he would say, or if he feels like he's ready to end his recruitment in any way. But I think there's always a possibility with a guy like Kevin Bauman, with kind of his profile and the way that Notre Dame recruits.
Eric, you want the final say?
I will say happy pre-belated birthday to Tyler. That means it's not belated yet. I didn't mess it up.
Okay. All right, well, happy birthday, Tyler, whenever your birthday is. Hope you have a great day.
It is tomorrow.
Okay, well, happy birthday tomorrow then.
Well, I appreciate it. Thank you.
You bet. What should we expect in the South Bend Tribune and IndyInsider.com from you?
Yeah, I have a notebook coming of the latest news and notes. Hopefully catch up with Kevin Bauman a little bit, either before or after his visit. And then Mike Varell actually has a story in tomorrow's paper about Andrew Kristofic. Got to spend some time talking to him, so look for that as well. And then obviously, if you haven't already read the story about Jay Bramblett committing to Notre Dame, you can find that on IndyInsider.com or in today's South Bend Tribune.
Tyler, as always, thank you very much for the knowledge. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, see you guys.
Tyler James, Fighting Irish Football Recruiting Insider for the South Bend Tribune. Check him out also on IndyInsider.com. His Twitter account, TJamesNDI, stands for Notre Dame Insider. Coming up next, Eric will answer the My 5 question of the day. The 5 Notre Dame football players that have the best chance to earn All-American status this season. Answers next on WSBT.
One question, 5 answers. This is the My 5 question of the day on Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT.
Eric Hansen will answer this question. The 5 Notre Dame football players that have the best chance to earn All-American status this season. 5 answers coming your way. Here is choice number 5.
Yeah, sometimes you can see them coming and sometimes you can't. And my number 5 are 2 guys that will share number 5 that you don't see coming. And that's Alize Mack and Chase Claypool. They both have the potential to be All-American. They have not done the kind of things to this point in their career that would suggest that they have an All-American season coming this year. But Alize had a really strong spring, and if you look at the ceiling of those guys, they have that kind of potential.
Number 4.
Okay, somebody that you can see coming, and it's Alex Bars. And when you're looking at the early, and a lot of the offensive linemen get All-American because the pros like him. So you see who the pros like. And Alex Bars right now is rated as the number 2 guard in the 2019 draft.
About that. That might be a little under the radar for a lot of Irish fans. The 5 Notre Dame football players that have the best chance to earn All-American status this season. Choice number 3.
I might have him higher if it weren't for the competition at this position, but Jerry Tillery, I have at number three. I think he's going to have a really good year. But you have Ed Oliver at Houston. You have the Clemson defensive tackles and Alabama defensive tackles. It's hard to crack that position group. But Jerry Tillery, I think, is in line for a fine season.
Good evaluation there. Up to number two.
Julian Love, I don't think he's on the pro radar as much as he is college because of the numbers he put up with pass breakups last year and interception returns for touchdowns. You know, he's got all the makings to be an All-American. And if Notre Dame's defense has a really good year, he's going to be a reason why, and that's why he's number two on this list.
The five Notre Dame football players that have the best chance to earn All-American status this season. Number five, we had a dual five with Alize Mack and Chase Claypool. Number four, offensive lineman Alex Bars. Number three, defensive lineman Jerry Tillery. Number two, cornerback Julian Love. And Eric, in your opinion, the Notre Dame football player that has the best chance to earn All-American status this season is?
I think it'll be Tavon Coney. He had as many tackles as Manti Te'o did his junior year and his senior year around there. What he has to get is more tackles for loss, more sacks, turnovers. But again, if Notre Dame goes from a 45-ish defense to a top 20 defense, Tavon Coney is going to get a lot of recognition. So that's why he's my number one.
That is today's My 5 Question of the Day from Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat, 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader.
Here's Eric Hansen with what's coming up in tomorrow's South Bend Tribune sports section.
Well, Tom Noy has a column on Marion softball coach George Grenert, who is retiring after 30 years. Mike, as Tyler mentioned, has a story. It's really cool on Andrew Krastovic, the offensive lineman who used to play quarterback with Phil Jakovic. Now he blocks for him, and he'll join him at Notre Dame just a year later. We have a state finals advance. Really cool story. Nate Patterson from Plymouth going for the official state record in the high jump. He's also the number one seed in the long jump, 1 inch ahead of a kid from LaVille named Luke Beeler, and much, much more.
All right, Eric, very good. Looking forward to that in tomorrow's South Bend Tribune sports section. One game final in Major League Baseball this afternoon from Comerica Park. The Tigers down the Angels 6-2. They're in the top of the ninth inning out in Oakland, and the Athletics are shutting out the Rays 7-0. Cubs and Mets will get started at 7:10 tonight. Jason Hayward will bat second for the Cubs when they let me take a step back. According to this Twitter, it says on Friday, but I think they meant tonight he will bat second, and it'll be the first time he will hit second since July 3rd, 2016. And he's made a lot of contact lately, having struck out just one time since coming off the disabled list May 18th. So that's actually some good progress from Hayward. Eric, thank you. I will talk to you at Four Winds Field tomorrow night.
Sounds great.
Thank you so much, Eric. Sean will join me in just a couple of moments as SportsBeat continues on your home of the Fighting Irish, 96.1 WSBT South Bend, the sports league.
Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT presents Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat.
Booger, up and in! With 2 seconds left, Notre Dame leads!
Malpas again, backhands, he scores!
Down to the corner, Jablonski, three is good!
Andrew steps in, he's going to throw deep for T.Y., he's got it!
Flips to Jenkins, three for the win, it's good! Villanova wins it!
He tied, it is a touchdown! New England wins!
Adios! Cubs win their ninth in a row!
Miles Boykin is in the end zone!
The Irish have come back!
Here are your hosts, Darren Pritchett and Sean Stiers.
And SportsBeat continues on 96.1 WSBT. Thanks for joining us on this Thursday evening. Sean Stiers from our studios, Darren Pritchett in Midland with the South Bend Cubs, who will take on Great Lakes. Pre-game at 6:50, first pitch at 7:05. We have a little breaking news to take care of. We might know the ACC Big Ten Challenge opponent of Notre Dame, Indiana, Purdue, Michigan, and the like. So we'll tell you about that in just a second. I'm a little stoked about one of them, I'll have to be honest.
Okay.
We'll get to Pirates Cubs Slide Gate Part 2 from last night. Good grief. Is this going to be just like a regular segment on the program, like Rapid Fire?
No kidding.
Unreal. That'll be fun. And we have Rapid Fire coming up in just a little bit. I know Sean teased me a little bit on what one of the segments are going to be. So it was kind of a Twitter thing today.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to answering those questions. So let's start with what could be considered some breaking news. John Rothstein, college basketball reporter for CBS Sports, has come out with what he believes will be the Big Ten ACC Challenge games for this year. Now, he puts it on Twitter that this is according to a source.
Okay.
So this is not 100% official. This is what John is reporting according to a source. So let's take this with a grain of salt, but normally what John puts out there is right on the button.
Right.
So here is what we get. According to John, the Fighting Irish of Notre Dame will be at home, and
ooh,
they will take on...
I like this already.
They take on the Fighting Illini of Illinois, who are rebuilding a tad bit, but they have a really intriguing high-end point guard coming in. It'll be a new-look Illinois team. I don't know how I know that, but yeah, Illinois at Notre Dame is what John is reporting as the Big Ten ACC Challenge matchup. So I know Illinois has been down. They missed the tournament 5 straight years. I hope 4 years from now we're not going 9 times,
right.
But I don't know. Does that get you excited at all? I mean, I'm from Illinois, so I'm really excited about the two teams I root for coming together, but from a non-Illinois fan standpoint who follows Notre Dame. So what's your reaction to that?
Yeah, I like it. It's a Big Ten team they haven't played in, I don't know how long. I can't remember. Just recent memory. They obviously haven't played them since Mike Bray has been here. I don't know the last time they would have played Illinois, but it's based on kind of how the teams finished the year before. Notre Dame was down a little bit, so it should be. I don't know if even matchup is right. I think Notre Dame, based on how Illinois has been the last few years, should probably be maybe a slight favorite anyway going into that, even though they're going to be fairly young. But I like it, and I also like the fact that they finally get one of these ACC Big Ten Challenge games at home.
They played a couple of years ago in Champaign, kind of a rededication of the State Farm Center, although they'd kind of done that a couple of times. I don't know how they come up with that, but Demetrius Jackson was still on the Irish at that time, and they held on for a victory of something like 84-79.
That's crazy. I don't remember that at all, Darren. I'm sorry. That just blew right past me. I had forgotten all about that game. You're right.
Again, that's the two teams I root for, so those things kind of stick in my head for whatever reason. And they met in the NCAA tournament in 2004 down in, let's see, was it 2004? I want to say it was 2004 in Indianapolis. And it was, oh gosh, Dan Miller got hot and hit a bunch of threes in the first half. And the following year, Illinois went to the Final Four. I think I have that right. It was either 03
or
04. It was
05 they played for the championship.
Right. So. And I just can't remember if it was 04 or 03. I think it was 04 that they played in the round of 32 down in Indianapolis, because it was the game after Notre Dame almost lost to Wisconsin-Milwaukee. They missed a layup at the buzzer.
Okay, yeah.
Or Notre Dame would have lost that game, and then they got hot against Illinois from the three-point line and won that particular matchup. So, according to John Rothstein of CBS Sports, your Big Ten ACC Challenge matchup, Illinois at Notre Dame, the losing team can't use the word fighting anymore.
Yeah. Shows how memorable both of those games were. Either that or I'm just getting old over here, Darren. But yeah, I'd forgotten about that. But I still like it. It's still been a team that they don't traditionally play. We've seen more of Michigan State and Indiana and Purdue, obviously, in recent years. So I like it.
Okay, so according to John Rothstein of CBS Sports, besides Illinois at Notre Dame and the Big Ten ACC Challenge, we have Purdue at Florida State.
Okay.
Yeah. Like Purdue, they get Carson Edwards back. He took his name out of the NBA draft. Florida State, okay.
Yeah.
I don't know about this one because I don't know how good Louisville's going to be, but Michigan State at Louisville. A couple of years ago, that's a marquee matchup. Absolutely. Now, I'm not sure. You've got North Carolina at Michigan. Like that.
Yeah, like that.
That should be a good contest. And Indiana going to Cameron Indoor Stadium to take on the Duke Blue Devils. So Indiana's got a couple of those young pups that will head down there, including a young man from South Bend. We'll get a little taste of Cameron Indoor Stadium.
That's right, Demezi Anderson, and then you've got Romeo Langford, the freshman as well. So yeah, that'll be good for them getting in there.
So that's according to John Rothstein of CBS Sports. Those are the reported Big Ten ACC Challenge matchups. Indiana at Duke, Michigan hosting North Carolina. Michigan State hits the road to take on Louisville at the Yum Center. It is Purdue at Florida State, and the Fighting Irish will take on the University of Illinois at Purcell Pavilion. So that's a little sneak peek of what could happen in early December in the Big Ten ACC Challenge. So I would assume those will become official pretty quick from the Big Ten and ACC offices. So there you go. Always one of my favorite weeks of the year, the Big Ten ACC Challenge. That's the week I really get into college basketball, because first couple of weeks are a little on the snoozy side, except for the Maui Classic and those type of things. Right. But that's a look at what we could see in the Big Ten ACC Challenge. We shall now shift gears to Major League Baseball. All right, so let me set this up. Hopefully our answers are longer than the setup.
I don't know.
A couple of days ago, Cubs first baseman Anthony Rizzo slid into home plate in an attempt to break up a double play. Major League Baseball ruled a day later that the on-the-field and replay umpires got the call wrong, and Rizzo should have been called for interference. And the replay showed he went from one side of the third baseline to the other. He was actually in the grass toward the end, and he took out the leg of the catcher for the Pirates, Diaz, who was out in front of home plate. And Major League Baseball said, "I'm sorry" to the Pirates. Cubs won 7-0, so it really didn't affect a whole lot. So last night, the Pirates pitcher, Joe Musgrave, is on first base. There's a ground ball to third. Chris Bryant throws to second baseman Javier Baez, who is covering second base. He makes the catch for the force out, has no intention to throw to first base. That's very important in all this. Musgrove slid in hard to Baez and made a little contact. It was nothing severe, but there was some contact. So, of course, Baez kind of says to Musgrove, basically, you know, what's up with that? Musgrove apparently said he was sorry. And he and Baez talked for a second. Well, the bench is clear. The bullpens come out from left center field, and they run to second base to get involved in this situation. It was a very, very mild bench clear. Nothing really happened. Now, Cubs manager Joe Maddon argued Musgrove made an illegal slide into second base, which would have resulted in an automatic double play. But the umpires got together, they talked it out, and they determined the slide did not violate the slide rule, apparently because Baez did not attempt to throw the ball to first base. So there's the explanation. Before we get into what Baez had to say, the fact that it matters whether Baez wanted to throw the ball or not, to me, is puzzling. I think, Sean, to start the conversation, let me say this.
Okay.
With the new rules in place, no matter what position on the infield or the catcher, I think they feel protected with the new sliding rules. You have to slide directly into the base. You can't go out of your way. You can't leg whip. You just have to slide into second base like a normal slide. And because of that, I believe that the infielders and catchers now have gotten to the point where they feel comfortable after they take a throw that they're not going to be touched.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I think they feel protected. They're not expected to be hit anymore because of the rule.
And I'm sitting here watching the replay. I've watched it a couple of times, and it's puzzling that whether or not Baez throws or any second baseman shortstop throws has anything to do with it, because I kind of feel like, again, I've sat here and I've watched it twice. I feel like he's exchanging the ball from glove to hand, and in that process, he looks down and sees those spikes coming at him, and that's, I think, in that kind of split second, he makes the decision he's not going to try to, because he wants to get out of the way of those spikes coming at him. It seems like it had to more to do with that than just a decision like he was never going to throw the ball.
Right. So here's where I stand. I know we disagreed the other night when we talked about this, but I felt like Rizzo's slide in the old days was an awesome slide.
Yeah.
He did his job. With today's rules, I felt like he went out of his way to clip the catcher who was out in front of the plate, and I've watched the replay again. He went from the right side of the third baseline to the left side, ended up in the grass, so he did alter his path to get to home plate and took out the catcher. I do not believe Rizzo's slide was dirty. I do feel like it was an illegal slide. Now, you disagreed, so let me go to the next step.
Okay.
I feel like Musgrove's slide into Baez was a dirty play. Now, really? I know he didn't spike him. He didn't leg whip him. Here's why I believe that's the case. By the new rules, you're not supposed to slide late.
Right.
And you're not supposed to slide through the base. You should not end up on the other side of the base. You should be sliding to the base like you're sliding in on a stolen base attempt. You're not going to steal second and slide by the bag. So by that interpretation, he slid very late, which is dangerous on a middle infielder's legs. And number two, he slid past the bag, which also can lead to an injury. That's why it's illegal, and I really feel like Musgrove's slide is so much more in the dirty classification compared to Anthony Rizzo. Hmm. Fire away.
Well, I guess it's all open to interpretation. I agree with the two things that you're saying. He did slide late. He did go past the bag a little bit, but it's kind of like he makes contact with the bag with his feet, and it's kind of a pop-up slide right after the bag. And I think the fact that he did slide late, did he intentionally slide late? That's probably the bigger question. Just like with Rizzo, there was the possibility to break up a double play, so that's part of what he was trying to do. And I kind of look at it like he's a pitcher, so it's not like a pitcher is out there running the bases that often. It's not something that they really think about. They really practice a whole lot. So maybe that's part of why the slide was a little bit later than you'd want. So, I mean, I didn't look at it. Again, he slides straight to the bag. He's not going out of the path, any of those kind of things. So I guess when I look at it, yeah, he's trying to break up a double play, but maybe the slide is a little bit late because you've got a pitcher running the bases, and so he just started his slide later than your normal base runner would.
I just can't exclude a pitcher, and you're right. Everything you said is right. I just can't exclude him because I'm sure at some point he was a position player at some level, and you just, again, if you're sliding into second base to steal the base, you don't slide that way. You don't slide past the bag on a pop-up slide. So it was late, and he ended up past the bag, so I'm not going to give him the benefit of the doubt as a pitcher. If Baez is standing on top of the base or right behind it, he could have got injured due to that slide. Let's be perfectly honest. With the way the Pirates, including their catcher, gave him a 5 in the dugout, that wasn't your ordinary, hey, he broke up a double play, because Baez didn't throw the ball. So he had no effect on the play. I'm sure with the way Clint Hurdle played the game when he was a player, and I think most teams probably would have a conversation after what Rizzo did to Diaz, that if you have an opportunity to slide hard and cleanly into someone, and I guess the only way I can put it is to retaliate, then that's going to be talked about in a major league clubhouse.
Right.
And the fact that Diaz went over to Musgrove and kind of did a little 5 and a thank you and patted him on the backside, that makes me believe that at some point in the game, some Pirate was going to slide hard into a base to send a message to the Chicago Cubs that we did not like Anthony Rizzo's slide, and now you're going to have to deal with us doing that to you. That's my perception of the whole situation. And I don't know, maybe a position player executes that better, But again, I just don't like the late slide. A late slide can lead to injuries, and going by the base can lead to injuries, and that's why I'm going to put that in the dirty classification. Yeah. Again, in the old days, we would not call that a dirty play, but with today's rules, I think it is.
I think all those things make sense. There is obviously some history as well between the Pirates and Cubs already. Clint Hurdle is pretty much shown that he really doesn't like the Cubs. He doesn't like Javi Baez. He's been outspoken about the fact that he doesn't like some of the things that Javi Baez does. So that to me is the head scratcher. If you take issue with what Rizzo did at home plate, why didn't you just drill him in the butt the next day? I don't get that. Why are you waiting two games to slide in hard on Javi Baez at second base? That doesn't make sense to me. I mean, if you took issue with Rizzo, just throw at Rizzo the next day. You know, that's all there is to that. But I can see what you're saying. There are a lot of other things, and none of the replays that I saw that I see like the fist bump or the hand slap or any of those kind of things in the dugout. So I can see that. It all does make sense, but, like I said, when I initially saw it and you've got a pitcher going in, it's like, well, because you do minor league baseball. You know how it is. Those guys don't bat out there, so maybe he played 5 or 7 or whatever, however many years ago in high school and travel ball and that kind of stuff. But he's not out there a whole lot as a major league guy on the base paths.
Well, this is just my feeling. Everybody does it different with the unwritten rules. But if I'm the manager, and using your example, if I'm going to retaliate, I do not hit Anthony Rizzo.
Because it's too obvious?
No. If I feel like I've been wronged by Rizzo's slide, if I'm the Pirates manager and I feel like Rizzo was a dirty slide and I want to retaliate, I hit Chris Bryant. And I hit Chris Bryant because he's the best player on the team, and you want the guy who did you wrong to feel bad that he got his buddy hit because of what he did on the field.
Yeah,
because that hurts a whole lot more than taking one in the backside, in my opinion. So that's the way I would handle those situations if I was in that spot.
Yeah, I can see that. But again, it was Rizzo who did it, so if I was really mad at Rizzo. But what you're saying makes sense as well. But you see guys get thrown at all the time when they're involved in this kind of stuff. And it just seems like that's who you should retaliate against. Because, again, if this was intentional at second base, Baez had pretty quick instincts. His foot was on the bag initially, but he takes that bag off. And it's with a late slide and the whole thing. I mean, we're talking about a lot different situation right now if Baez is – foot is planted on that bag.
You bet.
It could be broken pretty easily.
You bet. That's why I don't like the slide. I thought it was really unnecessary and goes into that dirty category. Whether it's a pitcher or not, that's how you get people hurt, and that's what Major League Baseball is trying to avoid with these new rules. So whether he's a pitcher or not, I would not be happy if I'm the Chicago Cubs right now, and I believe they meet again next week at Wrigley Field. So
it's going to get uglier between the Cubs and Pirates, man. It's like the Pirates were these sweet little, the sweet little team. And I think there's got to be some jealousy there with Clint Hurdle as well, because they had some teams they couldn't advance past that wild card game. And, and now here's Mr. Lovable Joe Madden, and, with his cornpone quotes or whatever, and Clint Hurdle's not liking any of that stuff, so...
Never a dull moment, that's for sure. We'll see what happens when they get together at Wrigley Field. Why don't we take a break? We'll come back. We'll get to rapid fire on this Thursday evening. Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat from 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. It is now time for rapid fire. It is 6:32 at WSBT.
Little football question to start things off. Street and Smith magazine lists offensive guard Alex Bars as a first-team All-American for the upcoming season. Bars is the only Irish player they have as a preseason All-American. So, Darren, if you could pick one Notre Dame player who you think will be an All-American this year, would it be Bars or someone else?
Eric put forth a great argument that maybe the best player on the team could be Jerry Tillery, but that is a loaded position this year in college football. So it's going to be tough for him to possibly break through unless the Irish get to the playoff. That usually pushes people forward. I think Bars is a really interesting choice. A lot of times these offensive linemen are selected because of their draft status, and Bars is considered a top two offensive guard right now for next year, so I'm going to go with Bars.
Interesting. And it's when you think about Bars, you think about all the NFL guys who were watching Notre Dame's offensive line last year on film and scouting and everything else. These other guys had to be seen a lot, too. So if I had to pick one guy, it would be between three different guys. Jerry Tillery, like you said. Center Sam Mustipher, I think, is a little bit underrated, again, because the two top 10 NFL draft picks he played next to last year. And then the third guy would be cornerback Julian Love. And I think there are a lot of expectations on Tillery, like you said, a potential loaded position. So, and that does play a part in it. It's not just how good you are, but the other guys who are out there as well. How does he play in some of these bigger games and things like that? If I had to go with one guy, though, I think I would go with Julian Love as my All-American. 20 pass breakups last year, 23 total passes defense with three interceptions. He was second in the nation in total passes defense behind Josh Jackson of Iowa, who's now a Green Bay Packer. So I would go with Julian Love as my pick.
It's interesting if a certain guy could complete 60% of his passes and have the same rushing numbers.
Slam dunk, right?
He'd be in the conversation.
He would. Be in the conversation for a lot of things. That's for sure.
Before you get to the next one,
okay,
our guy Tom Noy covers the Irish basketball team for the South Bend Tribune.
Uh-huh.
We've been going back and forth a little bit about the possible, rumored Big Ten ACC challenge, Illinois at Notre Dame. He's yawning about the matchup. So in order for us to duke it out, he's going to come on the program tomorrow night. So,
oh, okay. All right.
So be prepared.
So we'll get to spar with Tom Noy a little bit, huh?
I think it might be in the 5 o'clock hour, but if you'd like to jump in, you know, feel free to walk on in studio and be a part of the whole fiasco.
At least
so
he remembered the fact that they played him. So, I mean, that's all that really matters.
Okay.
All right.
Done.
Next question for you. You kind of referred to this one earlier. It's been trending on Twitter the past couple of days. There's a list, and people have been copying and pasting your favorite player of all time from each sport. So I'll go down the list, and we'll both kind of do them one at a time. So first, your top NFL guy. This is kind of a no-brainer, but go ahead.
Oh, the greatest number 7 in NFL history, of course. Broncos quarterback John Elway. No doubt, no-brainer, piece of cake. It'll be that way until the end of time.
I didn't ask who you had a robe of and, you know, that you have a mannequin of the guy in the corner, but it would be
my sleeping pillow, body pillow, is John Elway. You know, of
that's
course,
right. Yeah. Mine's Roger Staubach.
Good choice.
My equivalent to your John Elway. Grew up, you know, with him and Captain Comeback and the whole thing. Love Roger Staubach.
I thought Emmitt Smith might top your list.
Emmitt's, I mean, let's be honest. There are a lot to choose from, and Emmitt's right up there as well. But I go back to the early days with Roger the Dodger.
My first football jersey was a Broncos number 53, Randy Gradishar. We had him on the program many moons ago because he was going into the College Football Hall of Fame, and he was stunned that was my first ever jersey. He didn't think he was, I guess, had a jersey at that particular time, but sure enough, it was a good old orange 53.
Very cool, very cool. The old Orange Crush. Which uniforms do you like better, Darren, current version or the old Orange Crush uniforms?
Well, we won Super Bowls with the new ones, so that kind
there
of
you go.
Because we didn't have much success in the Super Bowl with those old jerseys, but I still love the old orange back in the day with the D with the horse on the helmet. I'm still kind of fond of those, to be honest.
Okay.
But I do have an Elway jersey with the new design because they won the Super Bowl in it.
All right. Good deal. Favorite major league player of all time?
Stan Musial. Even though I never saw him play, I've read the bios about him. It was my dad's favorite player. He told me stories about watching him play. And, again, just having the opportunity in one of my internships to spend the day with him just sealed the deal as just a great man, great ball player. And I still think, even though he's a Hall of Famer, one of the more underrated players in Major League Baseball history.
Yep. Okay. That's a good one for sure, and I'm splitting this. I've got two guys on it. In fact, these next two, I've split it a little bit. My first major league guy, George Brett, probably comes as no surprise. Growing up where I grew up in the middle of Kansas, I mean, I think everybody wanted to be George Brett back then. But I wasn't a third baseman when I was young. Mm-hmm. I was a catcher, and so my favorite 1A is Gary Carter. I was a big Gary Carter fan growing up. Loved the way he played. Yep, the kid. And so those are my two baseball guys.
Boy, it's just Gary was a great ball player. Of course, we lost him way too soon due to an illness. But as soon as he went to the Mets, though, that 86 group, it was hard to root for him with Strawberry, Gooden, Backman, Dykstra, that group, Ray Knight. Ugh. Of all teams for him to go to. I always liked him with Montreal, but when he went to the Mets, that just kind of changed everything.
It's funny because, I was on it, back again, like way back into the 70s. I was on him when he was with Montreal, and I remember when he went to the Mets, I'm thinking, oh my gosh, they're horrible. Now he's going to be a Met, and they obviously ended up being pretty good there for about a 3 or 4 year span. All right. I know you don't watch as much NBA now, but you and I both grew up watching more NBA. So your favorite NBA player of all time?
Well, I love the 80s NBA style. There was nothing better than Celtics-Lakers in the NBA Finals. You look forward to that every year. We didn't have it 4 in a row like we do with the Cavs and the Warriors, but they met a lot in the 80s. And being a Celtics guy, of course, good old number 33, the Hick from French Lick, Larry Bird, is my guy. I mean, he was just so masterful, high basketball IQ. He looked like a guy that wasn't fast, couldn't jump. If you're on the playground, he probably would be the last guy you would pick if you're going by the looks of the player. But just his vision, the hustle. He just was one of those guys that knew how to get the ball in the basket, but at the same time, I'll never forget the three-point shooting contest he would always do so well in and win. And the one time, might have been at the old Chicago Stadium, he let it go, put his finger in the air like, yep, that's going in, and he won the challenge. He just was so much fun to watch, and there's not really been anybody since that has topped Larry Bird in my eyes.
And I think back then you were either pro Celtics or were pro Lakers. It was Magic or Bird back then. And I've got another tie here. Uh-oh. Because I was not a Bird guy. I was not a Celtics guy.
Oh.
So the other guy in the East, and his days were winding down in the early days of Bird, Dr. J was my original guy. Jordan before Jordan, flying around and just the things he could do with the basketball. And then he finally got his championship before he retired. And then, of course, Magic Johnson as well, because that's where the Lakers-Celtics rivalry really picked up there, obviously, in the 80s. Just really like Magic. So versatile. Showtime Lakers. That was the team that I followed more back then.
It's funny. My second team in the 80s, the Dallas Mavericks.
Really?
Because they had an old Illinois guard, Derek Harper, as part of their team. They had Rolando Blackman, Roy Tarpley, James Donaldson at that time. So I actually was a Maverick fan because of Harper, along with being a Celtics guy.
Yep.
See, odd combination.
We lost the Kings out of Kansas City really early.
That's right.
So sitting there in the middle of the country, there obviously were not very many NBA teams around. So
Reggie Theus.
Yeah. Huh, yeah, that's right. And the names like the Notre Dame women have now, the names beneath
below
the numbers back then.
Yep. I like that. Yep. I like that.
That's right. All right. College football. Favorite college football player of all time.
This is really nuts, but we subscribed to Sports Illustrated when I was a kid, and I would collect Sports Illustrated covers of Stanford quarterback John Elway.
Hmm.
And I remember in fifth grade, the day, I don't know if it was the day he was traded, but I remember talking to one of my friends that, hey, the Broncos just traded for, John Elway, and that's a guy, I liked in college, and I was all excited. So it's kind of weird. That was the guy, for whatever reason, I followed in college, and then he went to my NFL team. So I guess it's still got to be him. From a Notre Dame perspective, boy, there were a lot of fun guys to cover. I mean, Brady Quinn comes to mind right away. He's always going to be one of the favorites. Manti Te'o was always great to talk to. And Deshaun Kizer, I always enjoyed interviewing Deshaun. He was very thoughtful when you would ask him a question. He would give you a really good answer. So those are some of the guys for Notre Dame for me. And, well, We got to throw Mike McGlinchey, who might be the best interview we've ever had.
Yeah, that's right. I don't know why I was expecting you to say Jeff George for some reason. But.
Oh, no. I'm good.
Yeah, I'm sure. Mine, I got to go, predates me being at you and I both covering Notre Dame, but Rocket Ismail got to be the guy.
Oh, yeah.
Game breaker, electrifying speed, obviously, and got to interview him later after his playing days, and just a really good guy. Always enjoys talking to people, and just a good guy. So I go with Rocket Ismail.
It's been 10 or 11 years ago. He came on SportsBeat and rapped.
And that's what I think when I interviewed him, he was trying to do.
Yep.
He had like a little rap group, and they had an album and all this different stuff. And obviously didn't take off really big, but yep. Rocket and his rap.
Yep.
All right, college basketball player. Favorite college basketball player?
I think because being an Illinois fan back in the day when they went to the title game, D. Brown was electrifying Big Ten player of the year. So D comes to mind for me. And for Notre Dame, I was always a huge Matt Carroll fan.
Mm.
Really liked watching him play at Notre Dame. Really good guy to interview and made quite a bit of money in the NBA, although it didn't have the impact. But he got a big contract. I don't know if it was from Charlotte or what team it was, but he got one of those $80 million contracts, so things ended up very well for Matt Carroll.
Yep, absolutely. All right, I got to go with my guy Danny Manning. Manning and the Miracles, 1988 national champions, no doubt about it. All right, we'll try to get through these next few a little bit quicker here if we can. NHL, your favorite hockey player of all time.
Boston,
NHL hockey player.
Boston Bruins right winger. Cam Neely, a 50-goal scorer, was cheap-shotted by Ulf Samuelsson in the 92 playoffs. His leg thought it was broken. His body thought his leg was broken, and two bones started growing in his leg. And he continued to play. He couldn't play every game, but still was a dominant player. But when he was good, he was a great goal scorer around the net, had a slap shot, and wouldn't be afraid to fight you either.
All right. Mine is just Wayne Gretzky. I mean, you know me, I'm not as deep into hockey as you, but he was huge and he was fun to watch back in the day, back in the 80s.
Saw him in person twice. Unbelievable.
I bet. Do you have a favorite boxer, Darren?
Never was big into boxing. I just remember in 1984, McDonald's had a promotion where a sport, and if an American won a medal, you won a prize. And mm-hmm. Pernell Whitaker, Sweet Pea, won me a gold medal, won me a Big Mac. So thanks, Pernell, for that free Big Mac back in 1984.
That's what I remember that summer, because that was the Los Angeles Olympics that obviously mm-hmm. the Russians and the Eastern Bloc didn't attend. So Americans were winning gold everywhere that summer. It was Big Macs right. and fries and Cokes all summer long, courtesy of McDonald's. So my boxer, though, is Marvelous Marvin Hagler. I think maybe a little bit. Never really got the same publicity as Sugar Ray and Tommy Hearns and some of those other guys. And unlike a lot of these other guys who would retire and then come back out of retirement, he got robbed against Sugar Ray. He retired. He rode off into the sunset. I think he lives in Italy now. He never came back. I always loved Marvin Hagler.
Even though I was not a fan, but at the same time, must-see TV was when Mike Tyson fought.
That's true, too.
Back in the day, it was something to see.
It lasted 90 seconds, but
that's right.
It was an event for those 90 seconds.
That's right.
Just to watch the whooping. All right. Do you have a one last one? Favorite? Do you have a favorite tennis player? I'm curious.
Oh, gosh. You know, as a kid, I loved Jimmy Connors just because of his attitude and his enthusiasm. The Krikstein match at the U.S. Open where he came all the way back from two sets down to win always stands out for me. So I'll go with Jimmy Connors.
It was fun watching that Jimmy Connors. It was at the 91 U.S. Open, 91 or 92, where he was kind of on his last legs and
yes.
he made the run to the semifinals, I think. That was fun watching that. I was the other guy. I was McEnroe,
yeah.
though. Between the two, they both obviously had a lot of volume, but I always enjoyed McEnroe.
Golfer for me is Phil Mickelson, so that wasn't on my list. But, yeah, that was a fun list. I'm glad Twitter did that. That was kind of fun to see other people's yeah. answers to that particular question.
Definitely.
That's going to do it for Sports Beat tonight. We have been brought to you by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds. Goshen Heart and Vascular and Blackthorn Golf Club and the Blackthorn Card. Sean, thank you. We will talk to you tomorrow.
That was quick. Sounds good. Have a good call tonight.
Thank you. Appreciate it. That will do it for Sports Beat. South Bend Cubs baseball is next from 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader.